Middle Tennessee, a 15 seed, is going to take down the Michigan State Spartans.
March magic for the Yale Bulldogs. Their first NCAA tournament win in program history.
And in double overtime, Little Rock is moving on.
Who wants to have some fun?
Well, let's start the insanity.
Insanity it is. We are officially right into March Madness. You're listening to the Sports Support Podcast with Brad and Clay here on Tiki Island Radio and TikiIslandRadio.com. And tonight on the Sports Report, we're going to recap the craziness we've seen in March Madness so far. A ton of upsets that Clay called, and I called one, but his team, that his pick to be Cinderella, had done an excellent job so far. And we'll talk about their triumph over their big team that they upset. We'll also get to some NBA news. The top two teams in the NBA faced off against each other last Saturday night whenever the San Antonio Spurs and the Warriors faced off in a massive showdown on Saturday night. We'll also recap some Anthony Davis news, some big news, a big day today in Cuba for the MLB. Welcome into the show today, my co-host Clay Schrader. What's going on, Clay?
Just in time.
Well, it's good to have you on the show, man. We got a lot to get to here today with March Madness. We've caught a couple upsets that happened. We got to get to who our sweet 16 teams are now that are left, and we'll also get to some NFL news when it comes to the Denver Broncos. We'll see what they're going to do with the quarterback situation. I know, Clay, you got some news about that you want to get to us later on. We'll also talk about injury news in the NBA when it comes to Anthony Davis and Chandler Parsons, two profile players on a Western Conference squad that are both going to be done for the rest of the year, and the impact that may have on them going forward and their teams for this potential playoff run. So we'll get to them also later on here in the show. A really big day, a really special day for not only the MLB when it comes to a fantastic day in Cuba today, but to have the Cuban national team take on a Major League Baseball team for the first time since 1999 is pretty special. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. A lot of people were in attendance for that game. So we'll get to the scores and the highlights of that game and just the specialness that it was for that to take place here today on ESPN. It was. So, Clay, the madness is here. We had some teams that we picked to make some upsets, and then some teams who's kind of surprised us all. Upset some of the Goliaths, if you will, when it comes to teams like Middle Tennessee State. Team right there, Arkansas Little Rock. They made a big run. You picked them. I should have went with them. You were smart. Your little guy knew.
Yeah, no, they didn't go as far as I thought they would, but they still made some noise. One of the best games of the tournament. That Texas A&M Northern Iowa game the other night was crazy. The game before that, Texas versus Northern Iowa in the first round was crazy. That half court buzzer beater, probably the best shot of the tournament. It's been a crazy tournament. It's been, I mean, I think we knew it would be like this. But still, it's still kind of shocking to see all the upsets and all the crazy games, you know. A few blowouts. You know, the second round, for the most part, has been pretty, you know, kind of lackluster. There was a few good games, you know. Kentucky and Indiana was a good game. Stephen F. Austin, speaking of another little team, they nearly beat Notre Dame. That was a great game. VCU and who did VCU play? It was a two-seed. I can't think of it. Oklahoma. That was a real good game. But other than that, there was a lot of second-round blowouts, it seemed like. But overall, it's been a crazy tournament.
Yeah, I mean, we knew going in that there would be upsets. We kind of picked some. I picked a couple. You did, too. But when you're really looking at the bracket, when you look at it, man, and you're going through there, you're trying to fill it out, and you're thinking, you know what? I know it's March Madness. I know craziness happens, but I can't see Michigan State losing to Middle Tennessee. I mean, come on. That's a hard way.
Yeah, that it's hard to pick a 15 seed over a 2. I mean, 12 seed over a 5, yeah, that's going to happen every year. You know, maybe even a 13 seed. But a 15 over a team like Michigan State that had been rolling, you know, I picked them to win it all. So, I mean, it's just crazy. I just completely ruined my bracket.
So, we go ahead.
And then Middle Tennessee, of course, gets blown out in the second round. So, that's how it goes, though.
Just to name some of the upsets that took place in the first and second round of the NCAA tournament, just to give you some names here. Yale knocked off Baylor 79-75. They really out-rebounded that team, and that's a Baylor team that is known best for its rebounding. They got out-rebounded by the 12-seed Yale and got knocked out of the first round. Then you had Arkansas Little Rock go on and win a close game and upset Purdue, a 12-5 seed, 85-83. Wichita State, this was a team who had to play in to get into this thing. They beat Vanderbilt to get in, then they beat the number 6 seed Arizona to advance in the first round. And then how about a team like Gonzaga? A lot of people had written off this team. They go on and they beat, they upset the number 6 seed Seton Hall. And then they keep it rolling here, and they keep upsetting some teams as they advance past number 3 seed Utah. And now they're in the Sweet 16, Gonzaga is.
Yeah, they're one of the most impressive teams in the tournament to me, the way they've been playing. I mean, beating teams handily.
I was pretty excited about this next one right here. I actually called this upset. One of the ones that I actually did call it was right. For the first time in school history, they got an NCAA tournament win, and that was Hawaii. Again, I was going with the island to upset West Coast California, the 4 seed, and they did that 77-66.
Yeah. Even the president nailed that pick. Kind of see it coming in a way. I still picked Cal to win that game just because I like Cal. I like their athleticism, but one of their best players got hurt, you know, in practice leading up to the game. I probably should have changed my pick, but I went ahead and stuck with the Bears and bit the bullet. And congratulations to the Rainbow Warriors. Or are they just the Warriors now? I'm not sure.
Anyways,
it's always special when a team gets their first NCAA win. Kind of surprising. I mean, I figured Hawaii would just maybe won a tournament game before.
I know. I didn't know that until after, actually.
I mean, they're not a huge school, but still, it's not like it's, you know, Middle Tennessee or something. But that was a great game. Great job by Hawaii. Not so great in the second round against Maryland, but Maryland's playing really good basketball right now, so that's a team you really like. It'll be interesting to see what the Terps do in the next round.
I think you're right.
They have a Kansas.
Let's see. Coming up in the next round, they will actually take on, number 1 seed Kansas.
Mm, that'll be a good game. I don't know if Maryland can take them, though.
We'll see. I'm sure we're not done.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm sure we're not done getting some upsets.
No, there's not going to be 4 number 1 seeds in the Final Four.
That's true. I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is the first time since 2012 that all four number 1 seeds have advanced to the Sweet 16.
Well, that is crazy. Despite all the upsets, the one seeds keep winning. And for the most part, the 2 seeds have done a pretty good job. Oklahoma, Villanova. Villanova surprised a lot of people the way they played. They'll have a tough test against Miami in the round of 16. But, yeah, pretty much everybody but Michigan State. You know, that really hurt me, especially. But
I think it hurt just about everybody. I think that was the one that actually busted everyone's bracket.
Yeah. Stephen F. Austin over West Virginia was a big shocker, too. I had West Virginia going to the Sweet 16 or maybe even the Elite Eight.
That was another one of my teams. I actually had West Virginia going to, I think it was the Final Four.
Oh, wow. It wasn't even a close game. Stephen F. Austin handled them. Very easily.
70-56, and Walkup went off for 33 points, and the Lumberjacks walked out of there with a big win.
That's a good team. They're a good team. They've only lost, like, 5 conference games in the last 3 years. That was a team to keep an eye on. I think they were underseeded by the committee, and I thought Middle Tennessee was underseeded by the committee, in all fairness to Michigan State. I mean, they don't deserve any, you know, no excuses, but I did think Middle Tennessee was a little underseeded, and Hawaii was too, I think. But, I mean, you have to seed the team somewhere. When a team like Stephen F. Austin is that good, they've only lost 5 conference games in 3 years, and they get a 14 seed, that's pretty tough. I mean, I think Stephen F. Austin is really more like a 12 seed type team, you know what I mean?
Right.
But you just got to be ready to play, because one year you might run into a Stephen F. Austin or a Middle Tennessee that is probably slightly underseeded. You know, that's a really good team. And just because they're a 15 seed or just because they're a 14 seed doesn't mean they can't beat you. And that's been proven multiple times in this tournament.
Yeah, I mentioned just another team that you mentioned and another game that you mentioned there was the half-court buzzer beater by Northern Iowa to knock off 6 seed Texas. And that's actually a crazy game because you look at it going into the final minute there, Texas actually hit a bucket late to tie it, to make it 72-72, and then send that crazy shot to half court, and that's ball game right there. Then you have another upset going down. And one upset that it really wasn't an upset, but it's important to note because it probably affects everybody else's bracket like it does mine and yours. And that was the Hoosiers getting a big win over Kentucky in the 5-4 matchup, 73-67.
Yeah, that hurt me there in the second round. I picked Kentucky to go to the Final Four, and I was disappointed in the Wildcats. But gotta give Indiana credit. Their good player slips my mind right now. Oh Lord, he's a senior, Pharrell? Underrated guy for Indiana.
Is it Pharrell?
Yeah, Pharrell. He, kind of an underrated guy, not highly recruited out of high school, stuck around. You know, fifth year senior. Going out playing against all these, hotshot young recruits that Kentucky has, and so in a way, you're kind of pulling for Indiana, despite the fact that I picked Kentucky, but because you do like to see a bit of an underdog. You know, he's kind of an underdog story. You know, he was, like I said, not highly recruited out of high school, and he's had a really good career. It took a while, but that was a really good game. Indiana's playing really good basketball right now, and. They could advance, even further in this tournament. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm sorry, my internet is terrible. I don't even have the tournament pulled up, so I'm just trying to go off memory. I'm not sure.
You're doing great, man. You're blowing me out of the water with all those stats and information.
They have who's the one seed on that side of the bracket? Is it Virginia?
I think so. I think you're right on that. I don't have my whole bracket down here to look at. I actually had crossed out the bracket that I filled out, that I printed off and everything. I went through and I should have it. As the games are going, I had a red pen and I was marking circles and this, so it looks like I failed a math test or something. But yeah. It's upstairs right now. I had to go run and get it a little bit later on. But, man.
Okay, here we go. That's actually North Carolina. So North Carolina will play Indiana. I just found my bracket. Yeah. That'll be a good matchup. North Carolina's playing pretty good. They got past Providence the other night. That'll be a monster matchup.
Oh, yeah. Two profile teams.
Yeah, two blue bloods. Yeah, man, that hurt. That whole side of the bracket just killed me. I picked West Virginia and Kentucky to make it to the Elite Eight, and both of them are already out.
Michigan State, too. Had them going.
And
it's really the whole right side of the bracket.
Man. Look at this. I just say, don't this hurt. I had Wisconsin over Xavier.
You had that right.
And at the last minute, I marked it out. I erased it.
Oh, man.
And, of course,
that was a good pick.
Yeah, Wisconsin won it at the buzzer.
So we're looking at it right here. We've made it through the past two crazy rounds of March Madness where you look at it, and I know it messes up a lot of people's regular schedules when it comes to watching TV shows after work, because you go to TBS, go to TNT, and your show's not there. It's March Madness, and you see all these.
I like how all the games are on TV. It used to be it was only on TBS, and you just only got to see the game that your local TBS affiliate was showing. You know, kind of like an NFL game.
Right.
But now that it's on all the channels, you can watch literally every single game in the tournament. So
and
I feel like
it's the one and only time anyone ever watches true TV.
You're probably right. some older people might watch I feel like that's probably a show, a channel with a bunch of crime drama shows or something. So some people might be into that.
That's what TNT's for, drama.
Yeah, but you're right. That is the only time I watch TNT, true TV, and really TNT for that matter, is during the tournament. Sometimes TNT might have a decent movie on. I might record.
Well, the cool thing about TNT is they have good basketball games on twice a week.
That's true. NBA games. They do have NBA games, yeah. You're right about that. Taylor didn't register to me that is TNT.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know.
You're right. I remember TBS used to show the old Braves games back in the day. Anyway.
Every day. Every day there's a Braves game. You go to watch Seinfeld, nope. Yeah. The Braves are hosting the Yankees or something.
Oh, man.
So we've made it through the first two rounds. A lot of crazy upsets. We're not done, I'm sure, with the upsets. But to give you guys an idea of who we have left in the Sweet 16 of this year's NCAA tournament, and the games will actually begin this Thursday. We'll get back to more game this Thursday when CBS, TBS will host each of these, each two games on that day. The first games will be Miami and Nova. That's 3-2 seed going at it there on CBS followed by Texas A&M and Oklahoma. Some West Coast rivalry there. I'm not West Coast, but Big 12 rivalry there. And then you'll also have the 5-1 matchup we talked about a minute ago with Maryland. The Terps taking on Kansas, the one seed, and also Oregon. We'll see how good this Ducks team really is as they will take on the Duke Blue Devils late on TBS Thursday night. And then also on Friday, we'll have four more games. The Cyclones, Iowa State will take on number one seed Virginia, Wisconsin, who just snaked by Xavier that Clay had right until he switched at the last second. That's a 7-6 matchup. They'll take on Notre Dame there. And then Gonzaga, who's arguably playing better than anybody else in the country right now, they'll take on the 10 seed Syracuse, who's still alive. That's a crazy matchup with 11-10 right there. And then we'll also have the big matchup of the night, Indiana and North Carolina. Those are your Sweet 16 teams.
Pretty good tournament. Not too surprises, obviously, but for the most part, I think Gonzaga is probably the biggest surprise. But yeah, there's not real any just huge Cinderella. I guess you would say we do.
No, I was hoping to be Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah, I picked them, but they just couldn't get five. they couldn't pull it out two nights in a row. That's just two games in a row. That's just too much to ask.
That'd have been really cool.
That first round game against Purdue, man, that was a gut check game. That took.
Yeah, they showed up. They didn't. It wasn't a gift either. They earned that win.
Oh yeah, it was a tough gut check. It was a bring me lunch pail kind of game, an overtime game. They were down. 13 was, I gave up on my turn. It's another game. Then you texted me and said, hey, what about Little Rock? And I turned it back and it was tied. So no, in overtime.
Yeah, man.
I'd given up on them.
And then I got excited because the next game they were taking, I think it was Iowa State. And the next game they were taking on them and they were winning 4-2 early. And I said, hey.
I was looking pretty smart.
I was like, look at Little Rock Arkansas right now. Look what they're doing right now, man. They're up. Yeah. They just got a big win. Here they are in the second round, and they're up by two. So,
yeah,
good pick. I was hoping that they were going to advance to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, Yale over Baylor would have been a good pick. I should have made that pick, in all honesty. But did you pick Yale or did you pick Baylor?
I picked Baylor.
I think you went Baylor. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. It's a tough one.
I think Yale's pretty good. I had Baylor moving on, and then actually beating Duke. I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. Duke and Oregon. That's gonna be an interesting matchup. I know you're gonna be all over that one.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see, because right now this is where Coach K makes a lot of his money is in tournament play, and we'll see. Cause this is usually the time where they're the one seed, and somebody like Oregon sneaks in as a four seed, and we'll see right now how good this Oregon team is, and if they deserve that one seed as they take on the ACC power.
I will say this, though. I'll give you a little bit of a Cinderella. The team I bashed for getting into the tournament. I didn't think they belonged there, but you got to give Syracuse credit. They blew out Dayton. Then they blew out Middle Tennessee. That's not the toughest two teams to get by to make it to the Sweet 16, but give them credit. So they'll be there. They'll be playing Gonzaga. So there's going to be at least a 10 seed in the Elite Eight. So. It seems like that happens a lot when there's two 10 seeds or higher. They always tend to be on the same side of the bracket, and they always play each other. You know what I mean?
Right.
It seems like they hardly ever, multiple teams like that, make it to the Final Four, because it seems like they're always on the same side of the bracket. But anyways, one of those two teams will make it to the Elite Eight. That's crazy. I would never thought Gonzaga or Syracuse would make it to the Elite Eight.
Let me ask you this. Is it a bigger story if Syracuse gets to Elite Eight than Gonzaga?
That's tough. I honestly think it might be a little more surprising that Syracuse made it. This is a Syracuse team that lost to St. John's not that long ago. St. John's is really, really bad. I think Gonzaga had a better case of making the tournament than Gonzaga obviously won their conference, so they were automatically in. But they were kind of on the bubble there until they won their conference. I didn't think Gonzaga would get past Seton Hall, and I definitely didn't think they'd blow out Utah the way they did. I think Syracuse is more surprising.
I think you're right, because a lot of people, when they think about Gonzaga and Syracuse, especially this season, that's not really the season that both these teams had hoped for. But given what all Syracuse has went through in the offseason this year, behind the locker room, and then on the court as well, you mentioned the loss to St. John's there, they've battled through a lot of adversity this year, and here they are sitting there in the Sweet 16 and have a chance to advance to the Elite Eight and even further.
And then they have a potential matchup with Virginia or Iowa State in the Elite Eight. That's a winnable game.
I know.
Syracuse can make it to the Final Four. I'm not saying they will.
You know what? They could just win it all.
Syracuse or Gonzaga. The winner of that Syracuse-Gonzaga game, they got a decent chance of beating either Virginia or Iowa State. I think it will be Virginia. You kind of like being on that side of the bracket. Of all the number one seeds, you know, Oregon, Kansas, UNC, Virginia, I think I'd rather play Virginia.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's just the way that you look at how the other teams match up with Syracuse. Mm-hmm. You know, Kansas obviously was my pick to win it all. North Carolina's been playing really good as of late, of course. Oregon's been on fire going into the tournament. They get the one seed. We'll see what they can do against Duke. But Virginia, we've already seen them in the tournament struggle a little bit.
Yeah, they got a tough game from Butler. Got Ty Hampton easily, but you know that's Hampton. Yeah, they got a tough test from Butler, but that's a quality opponent. It'll be interesting. That matchup with Iowa State, that's going to be a good matchup. Iowa State's really surprising this tournament. I almost picked them to lose to Iowa. And then I did pick them to lose in the second round to Little Rock, but. Yeah, I wasn't too high on Iowa State coming into this tournament, but they're playing pretty good basketball.
Funny thing about the Cyclones, I actually picked them to beat Iona on my bracket on ESPN that I submitted and printed it off, and then when we got here in studio last week, I changed my pick to Iona.
It was a tricky pick.
Should have stayed with the Cyclones. It was just a gut feeling I had. Obviously, it must have been some kind of pizza I had or something instead, but... It's fantastic. You're right. A fantastic run so far by the Cyclones.
They can make some points. They can get past Virginia. That Midwest bracket, to me, is just wide open.
It really is.
14, Virginia, Iowa State, and then you got the 10 and 11 seed, Syracuse and Gonzaga. That's a wide open bracket. I mean, Iowa State and Virginia, they're the two teams that were expected to meet there, but still, I still don't have as much confidence in those two teams as I do say a Kansas or Villanova.
Right. Taking Kentucky out and Michigan State, both those teams out of there, opens up a lot of doors for all these other teams.
Yeah, you're right about that. And even Utah. Utah was a 3 seed. They got beat bad by Gonzaga. That was embarrassing. Or the last I saw it was embarrassing. I'm not sure what the exact final score was, but it was
a blowout. I think I have it. I have it right here. Let's see, 82-59, Gonzaga.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's embarrassing. All right. But Syracuse is playing good basketball, too, you know. So that's going to be a tough matchup. I wonder who the favorite is. I guess Syracuse is probably the favorite just because, I don't know, the way Gonzaga's playing, how could you pick against them?
I think going in, just watching the momentum that both these teams will have, my pick would be Gonzaga.
Really?
And, just the way that they've played so far this in the tournament. I know it's hard to keep that going in every game. And your opponent, they get to see tape and everything and what you've done, what you've brought to the table since the tournament's begun. But just the way these guys are gel, I think chemistry is a big part of it, and the way these guys are rolling, and the way that they do this every year, it seems like Gonzaga makes a big push deep into the tournament. So by next week, we will have our Elite Eight teams, and we will know the winner of Gonzaga and Syracuse and many other and all those other Sweet 16 matchups.
When is the date of some of these Sweet 16 games? You know, is it sometime this week?
Yeah, 24th, this Thursday and Friday are the Sweet 16 games.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. I think they're all night games, too. They begin like 6
probably.
Or 7. So.
Yeah.
Actually, I got a chance to, for the first time ever, watch basketball at work last week, and that was a fun experience, and I was sad to see it go. I kind of wish they would have 64 teams play every week.
Yeah. Yeah, we had the tournament on in the break room the other day, so I got to watch.
Is that a 70-inch TV that's in there?
Oh, it's a big one.
I think it's 70 inch. It's in there. That had to be the perfect way to watch a big time game.
I think it was a Duke UNC Wilmington game.
Nice.
It was a good game, by the way.
It was.
For the first half, I think Duke pulled away in the second half.
They stepped away in the second, I think.
So, and that'd have been a bad loss. But anyways, I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, we'll know who our teams will be next week as we get to the Elite Eight, and then from there the Final Four, then the final two teams. Maybe Kansas will still be there. It's one team that me and you both had in common to get to the finals. So we'll see. Yeah. Hopefully that team will at least play good for us so they can be there and make us look kind of smart.
Maybe so. we can use all the help we can get.
Exactly. So, Clay, Saturday night we finally had the prime time matchup we've all been waiting for when it comes to the NBA. We saw the top two teams, both who are on historic pace to break all kinds of records this year, and they've already done that for most part of this season. Both these teams talking about San Antonio Spurs and the Golden State Warriors. Neither one of these teams have lost at home, and the Golden State Warriors were taking on the San Antonio Spurs in San Antonio last Saturday night. And I don't know if you watched it, man, but it was probably the best defensive game by one particular team I have ever seen.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch most of it. I watched some of the highlights and part of the game. Yeah, Steph Curry was really, Steph was really struggling from the floor. Probably his worst game. I don't know, his worst game that I've ever seen. It might not be his worst game of his career, but it was pretty rough.
I think there was one worst game that he had, talking about going from percentage three-point range. In this game, he was 1 of 12 from three-point range. Now, three or four of those are late in the game when he's just throwing them up. But, I mean, yeah, if they go in, though, you're thinking, oh, it's just Steph Curry being Steph. So you have to count it onto his stat line there. But the biggest question all year in the NBA was, how do you stop Steph Curry? How do you stop the Golden State Warriors? And for one game, San Antonio figured it out. The key is to switch on everything. No matter if it's a big going to a small going to a big, you have to switch whenever anybody moves around, any of these picks or double screens, whatever you have there.
Don't give them an inch at all.
Exactly.
Switch and have somebody guarding somebody at all times.
Exactly. You don't want to double.
I like it.
There wasn't a lot of double team either. That's what made it more impressive, is that they actually wasn't double teaming Steph Curry that much. They were doing that well coming off screens. Now, that could have something to do with the way that Golden State was setting screens that wasn't that strong. You know, that they could easily go through it or over it. Because if you go under a screen, it's over. So they did not go under a screen all night long. They were going over or through it with a defender there. And they did such a good job. I remember several times, I'm going to say 7 or 8 times, Stephen Curry would have passed and cut and went over a screen. And you had Tim Duncan, Boris Diaw, and LaMarcus Aldridge, all three big guys, switch onto him and do a fantastic. LaMarcus Aldridge did the best job of any big that was on him. He didn't give him an inch. He actually knocked the ball out of his hands 2 or 3 times out of bounds. He was that good, not giving him an inch. And then whenever it was another small, maybe, you know, another guy that was really impressive was Danny Green. Not only is he good from shooting threes, but he also got out there and was the only guy this year to block a Stephen Curry three-pointer. And that was after going up for a pump fake that Steph just threw 2 seconds before.
Nice.
it was so impressive to watch this team. I don't want to go into too much about, I think a lot of people get entrapped in the game and they say, oh, well, San Antonio's the best team now. Golden State, they're not that good. You don't want to do that, okay? It's one game. It was in San Antonio.
Right.
The Spurs are pretty good. So you want to give them credit for what they've done there. A guy who didn't get a ton of credit because he didn't do that much on the offensive end, only scored 4 points, and only dished out, I believe, actually, yeah, 6 assists, 4 points. That's Tony Parker. It didn't have a whole lot of offense in him, but he was doing a fantastic job switching, not only guarding face-to-face with Stephen Curry, but also switching on Klay Thompson at times, which is another guy you can't let get open for three. San Antonio did, actually, I'm going to go back to the beginning of the game. Greg Popovich made the move, which is one of the boldest moves and rarest moves to make, and didn't start Tim Duncan. Only the third time in his career that Tim Duncan did not start in a game.
Wow.
And he chose to start Boris Diaw in that spot.
A little more athletic. Yeah, a little more athletic. I could see that.
And that was so smart to do, because this is a guy who not only is a terrific offensive guy, he's underrated passer for what he does. He's got that big body to throw in people in the post, and he can knock down a three as well, but he's also that good of a defender. He can go up and get blocks. He's not quick, but however, he can get in the way of someone cutting or trying to get around him.
Yeah.
So that was a fantastic move by Pop early in the game. And then in the fourth, I want to say, if I'm right on this, that Tim Duncan didn't even play in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
I think I'm right on that. He actually, he only had 8 minutes total in the whole game.
Wow.
And he scored 1 point. But, and that's what made it crazy, is the whole game, it felt like to me, San Antonio, watching this whole game, that the Spurs were winning by 10, even when they were up by 2. They were doing that good of a job on the defensive end, and Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge were carrying the load on the offensive end. We saw LaMarcus, he actually had a horrible game against them the first time they met up in Golden State. I want to say he only scored, I think it was 6 points, maybe something like that, 6 or 7 points, and was pretty bad from the field. In this game, he carried the load for him. LaMarcus had 26 and 13, and Kawhi Leonard, great job also on the offensive end, scoring 18 points, getting 4 assists, and rebounding 14 times. So they did a fantastic job. Whenever San Antonio missed a shot, they would get the offensive rebound. That transitioned into more offense, more chances. I'll just say it again. Every time that they were within 2 or 4, it felt like Golden State was down by 10 the whole game, and San Antonio ends up winning the game 87-79. That was the lowest output by the Golden State Warriors in like 2 years. And the fun thing is, we get to do it all over again on April 7th.
Wow, that's pretty quick turnaround. Got a couple weeks to get ready, but yeah, give San Antonio credit, man. Man, I like that defense. Golden State obviously played some pretty good defense too. Did San Antonio like use a lot of clock and try to make it an ugly, low-scoring game, or was this Golden State just step up their defense, you know, because they had to?
It was a fantastic game by San Antonio. I don't want to take anything away from the Spurs. Golden State, you know, to me, watching Stephen Curry mainly, because he was pretty much ineffective the whole game. Now, he did go out there. He did get some points. He extended his three-point record of most consecutive games with a three-point shot make. He did get that in this game. It was a 1-3 that he did make. However, he only ends up with 14 points, and most of that coming at the line with 5 free throws. And to me, watching him, it was his body language. The whole game, because he had struggled for the first half, in the second you saw him just basically out of the play. Like, it's basically just 4-on-4 because the guy who's guarding him is just standing there, and so is Steph Curry, just standing there not moving around. He's not cutting. He's not trying to get the ball. He's not setting screens. He's basically just standing in the corner letting the offense do their own thing. Now, I don't know. Yeah. Now, this was the second night off of back-to-back, so I don't know if that has something to do with it, with him being a little tired. I think it had maybe a little bit to do, but at the same time, this is the primetime matchup of the season. You have to be ready for it. And you have to know before the game if you're going to be able to go the full length of it and do what it takes, because you know you're going into a dogfight.
Absolutely. It looks like it was probably a dogfight.
It was a fantastic game. And like I said, the best part is we'll do this 2 more times, as we'll go back to Golden State on April 7th. And then, just a few days later, Clay, on April 10th, the Warriors go back to San Antonio.
Wow.
And if they drop, the Warriors can only lose 3 more games until they'll have to either tie or lose more games than the Bulls did in that historic season. Because if they lose two more, if they go the rest of the year and just lose 2 more games, they will break the record in the regular season, but they can't lose more than 2. So if they lose 2 more games, not saying they will, but if they lose 2 more games to San Antonio and then drop another one along the way, that record is out the window. And then you got to go into, and then you got to think, Clay, if the Spurs do win 3 games of 4, they're probably going to be the 1 seed.
Yeah, probably.
And that's what's even crazier about it, is how they could have a historic season, the Warriors, and not end up with a 1 seed. So I'm trying to decide, Clay, maybe you can help me out here. What do you think is more possible, more probable to happen in this season? Do you think the Warriors will be able to break the record and not win the championship, or not break the record, win the championship, or do both?
I would say not break the record but win the championship, or both. But I would say probably not break the record, but still win the championship would probably be.
So you think there's no chance they lose the championship?
I'm not saying there's no chance. I think if they don't get the record, they're like, okay, big deal, we can still win the championship. You know what I mean? I don't think they're going to put that much emphasis on the record if they don't obtain it. If they do obtain it, then I could see them finishing it on out. What was the third choice? Neither one?
Or both?
Yeah, both. Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, I don't see him getting the record, but I still see him winning it all. That's just my opinion. I don't know why I feel that way. Probably because they're the best team in basketball right now. I mean, the Spurs are right behind them, obviously, as we saw the other night, and could take them in the 7-game series. But for some reason, I've had that feeling for a few weeks that with this game coming up against the Spurs that we had the other night, you know, and playing the Spurs again and a couple other tough games they got, I just feel like, you know, they might lose a few games, and then they might rest some of their starters if they can. And then the Spurs are right there, you know, with them, so they really can't. But I think eventually winning the championship will become the number one focus. Right now they're focused on both, I think. But I think eventually they're going to put all their focus on winning the championship. And once they lose a couple more games, I think they're going to not really worry about this record. That's just my opinion, though.
You know, I think going back, this may be a little bit in their head. Going back to the beginning of the season where they were, I think it was 26-0. And they were trying to, it seemed like they were trying to win every game. Okay, it didn't matter who it was against, by what means, they were going to try to win every game and stay, they can keep that undefeated streak. And you see them play not as good the last 3 or 4 games. Able to sneak by with wins. Stephen Curry was carrying them along the way. They end up losing their first game. And I think after that, we saw them take a huge deep breath and say, okay, that's out of the way. Now we can just play basketball and not have to worry about the streak. I think that's I think that's kind of the same thing happening right now, because so many people are focused on them breaking the record and the historic pace that they're on, that I think if they were, it's almost probably better for them not to get the record, because then they can change their mindset and say, okay, now our one goal is to win the championship. We can do whatever we can. And going back to a team beating them, you're going to have to beat Golden State in Golden State two times for that to happen. And no one's ever, no one's beaten them this year all season at home. So good luck with that. If the one team that can do it's probably San Antonio, nobody in the East. But it's going to take a whole lot, because I don't see them losing four games in one series, much less two games at home.
True. I can see that. It's going to be tough. Tough to beat that team at home. Can the Spurs do it? That's the question. They did it in San Antonio. Can they do it in Golden State?
We'll find out.
I think they can.
April 7th.
I think they can. I think they can. But
April 7th, we'll find out.
Yeah.
The fun thing is, I think a lot of people, everybody in the NBA had to be watching that game Saturday night, and like most of the teams and coaches and everything, because you want to see the best two teams in the league. You want to find out how they're going to match up against each other. I think a lot of people are going to look at what the San Antonio Spurs did when it comes to not switching off screens and not just going under or anything like that, not giving up. And really, you can't help either if you're defending the Golden State Warriors. You have to do your best job covering man-to-man, because if you give anybody any space, they're going to knock down a three in your face.
Right.
So I think we'll see a lot of teams try to do the same method and steal that from the playbook, from what the Spurs did last Saturday, and try to do the same thing when they take on the Golden State Warriors. But we still have a few games left to go in the regular season. And we'll get to the NBA playoffs later on, but that was the matchup of the week this past Saturday night. So I wanted to get that in there, and it was really fun. I feel like we watched some of the best NBA games in quite some time this season. When you go back to the Warriors beating the Thunder at the buzzer beater by Stephen Curry, then last Saturday night doing the same thing with the Spurs taking it at home against the Warriors.
Yes. It has been some pretty crazy games here lately. You're right about that.
Clay, did you happen to see what's going on with Dwight Howard over the last couple of days?
I heard. I didn't see it. I didn't watch that game. I know Atlanta won. I thought it was crazy that it was against the Hawks, by the way.
Right. In Atlanta.
Right. Because he'd been kind of rumored to... That's where he was rumored to be going, you know, just a few short weeks ago. I didn't watch the game. I don't think he played that good of a game. But apparently he was wearing had stick 'em on his hands. Did he have a good job on the boards? I mean, did it at least pay off?
Well, apparently this is coming right after the first half. Come back in the second half, he checks into the game, and why is that the scoring table when he's checking in? There's a bottle of a Stick'Em right there, and he sprays it on his hands.
And oh, wow, just plain daylight, huh?
Yeah, and this is after the game, he was asked by a reporter. He said, I've been doing this for years, like going back 3 years, doing this almost every game.
Yeah.
And this game, he apparently had sprayed his hands, went in there, and this is something I don't like either. Anytime a player, like a star player like Dwight Howard, comes back into the game and a team's shooting free throws, you'll see the referee toss it to that player and let him just touch and feel and, you know, rotate the ball in his hands a little bit and then give it back to the ref. I don't like that one bit. Because you have situations just like this.
Good point.
And so Paul Millsap's at the line. He knocks down the first free throw. Dwight Howard checks in. He comes in. The ref throws in the ball. He spins it on his hands. He gets a good grip of it. Puts Stick'Em all over it. And he gives it back to the ref, who then just tosses it back to Paul Millsap. And as soon as Paul touched it, he knew something was up. He's like, hey, what's – and he threw it back to the ref and said, something's on that ball. And there's a big argument with Coach Bud and the refs. And it was sticking, but he put too much on this time. Too much residue was on that ball this time, and he got caught with it. And a lot of people were thinking, how will the league handle this? Because this is going to set the tone for how they handle it in the future as well. Because I don't think we're not done seeing this happen.
Yeah.
And the league decided, I think it was yesterday, they decided just to give him a warning. No suspension, no fine, no anything. They issued a warning, then they issued a statement to all NBA teams about this, not tampering with the ball or anything like that. So I don't think we're done seeing this thing. What's funny is I've seen a lot of people who are in the league, past players, like Tracy McGrady. He was on The Jump the other day on ESPN, and he said that this is no big deal. Players would go into the locker room before a game and do the same thing and then go out and play a basketball game.
It sounds like it must not be that big of a deal. He just got a warning. And he said he's been doing it for years. I mean, you know what I mean?
Right.
If an NFL player got caught using HGH and said, well, I've been doing it for 3 years, I mean, he wouldn't just get a warning.
Yeah.
So,
it didn't turn into a federal case, but...
You don't think of Stick'em being part of basketball, though. I mean, I guess he can help you get a rebound. He can help you grip the ball on a dunk. But still, you don't want the ball sticking to you. Trying to make a quick pass or something. You're shooting a shot. Right?
So I don't know what the really advantage of that is besides getting rebounds and dunks and everything, but apparently it's a big deal for bigs. And Dwight Howard was one of those guys who has been doing it for years, apparently, just got caught, and then it's kind of swept under the rug like it's no big deal. I just thought it was kind of rare. I wanted to talk about it today and see what you thought about it because, to me, I don't really like. I'm sure this happens in every sport. There's some kind of tampering going on, probably that we're not aware of, and it's probably best we don't know because that will probably tarnish the game for us a little bit.
Sure.
But I just don't like the idea of a player going out and having, you know, being able to have a can right there behind the bench anyway, able to spray on his hands and go out and then play a basketball game.
Yeah, I agree. Who put the stick on that? There is my question.
I know it's probably somebody on the staff. What's funny is
it illegal? Is it illegal or just kind of frowned upon?
It's not illegal.
Oh, okay.
What's funny is Arnie Bickerstaff, the interim head coach of the Rockets right now, who has the second worst job in the NBA because the first worst job is George Karl in Sacramento.
No, right.
But Arnie Bickerstaff, the interim head coach of the Rockets, he has been, I mean, this has to be, he has to go home and just say, God, why can't they just fire me already or pick somebody else? Because I watched the Rockets play last couple of games. They're actually taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder tonight. This team is so dysfunctional when it comes to basically the fundamentals of basketball, playing defense, having chemistry when it goes to on the offensive side and how the offense should flow naturally. It's so dysfunctional. It's probably got to be the same way in the locker room. And they actually had just picked up free agent Michael Beasley, of course, big-time draft pick out of Kansas State, and a former Miami Heat, and feels like he's been everywhere else in the league, feels like. They picked him up off a free agent. He actually was playing in Europe for a while. Was doing a good job here, so they signed him. And he's actually shooting more shots per minute right now than Stephen Curry. That's not what you want. However, when they were taking on the Hawks the other night, he was the only guy scoring or trying on the Rockets team.
Wow. That says something.
Yeah, and then what's funny is, and today, I heard an interview with Dwight Howard today, and he said that this, I'm sure, as a high-profile player, you have to say this. You have to have this mindset where you'll get hated on even more. He said he feels like this year's Houston Rockets team is a championship contender. And right now, they're fighting to get into the 8th seed of the Western Conference.
Hey, thanks, sir. Championship contender?
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a stretch.
That's what he said.
Just because they have the talent doesn't mean they might beat the Warriors and they might win one game against the Warriors in a 7-game series.
If Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green sits out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They got talent, obviously, but... Yeah, they're not a championship contender right now.
I don't think so either. So crazy news there when it comes to tampering with basketball in Houston and Atlanta last Saturday night at the game. We'll see how this is handled further down the stretch. I'm sure we haven't seen the last of this. I think the NBA needed to do a more stiffer tournament. Punishment. They really should have had a stiffer one for this one because I think we'll see more of it later on in the future. Clay, some big news broke on, I think it was Sunday, that the New Orleans Pelicans star forward / center Anthony Davis will be shut down for the rest of the season. This team is they're not in contention for any kind of playoff hunt. They're actually they're pretty much out of it right now, and they're even more out of it now, as he will be out for the rest of the season, and he plans to have right shoulder surgery and left knee surgery, which are huge. Both of those, especially the knee, are huge surgeries, and he will most likely miss the NBA Olympic run this summer. He said he won't be playing in that either. Now, what's interesting to note about this, not only is this a big news and a big hit for the Pelicans and the NBA, but there's something really interesting in Anthony Davis's contract about this season, which is he needs to make the NBA all-team, or the all-NBA team. There's three teams, by the way. They have the, you know, NBA first team, second team, third team. He needs to be on one of those three teams, and if he's not, he will lose his $24 million bonus.
Wow.
So my question is, if a team shuts down a player and he doesn't get the bonus, that doesn't really sound right to me. Now, he still has a good body of work for this season, and I think there's five votes when it comes to big men in the league. So he needs to be one of the top five big men in the league to be there. So I think ultimately he will be on the third team probably, maybe the second. We'll see how the voting goes. But that's got to be pretty disappointing if your team sits you down for the remaining of the season, impacting your chance at a $24 million bonus you would probably get if you continue to play. However, that would hinder your health a little bit because you would need that surgery anyway in the offseason. And Clay, he said earlier on this week that he's actually been playing with that shoulder injury for over 3 years.
Wow.
Now, it's interesting to note that this is the same knee situation that has hindered Dwayne Wade over the last couple of years, especially back in 2007, I think it was, when he had those two major surgeries on both knees.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the same thing and the same road back to health that Anthony Davis is going to go through. So we'll see. Yeah. He's a young guy. He's making a lot of money. We'll see how this impacts the rest of his career. Obviously, I think we'll expect him back when next season starts to make a run for the Pelicans. But right now, I think you're mostly focused on his future when it comes to later on down the road, and if this will shorten his career by any means.
Yeah, I think it's a catch. The fact that it could save him $24 million, though, definitely did hurt. I think that's definitely kind of helped make the decision. The fact that they're not going to make the playoffs. Yeah, I agree with New Orleans making the decision. It kind of sucks for him, though, to be losing out on that bonus potentially, but. Yeah, he's doing all right. He's in those H&R Block commercials, you know. He's
rolling around with that gray-headed guy.
Yeah, he's not hurting for money. Although that is kind of, I'm not gonna say New Orleans did it wrong. I don't know. You just have to get his thoughts on that. You know, I want to know if he thinks that they did him wrong or if he agrees with the decision. You know.
Right. I think the one thing that the team's gonna say and the organization's gonna say is they're looking out for his health in the future. And obviously, that is Anthony Davis is an investment that they've made for their organization.
True.
So, I think by that means, if you're going to look at maybe missing him, you know, him missing 13 games, it's not that big a deal in the stretch of his whole career. I think it's just impact. It's funny how it impacts maybe that much money for one guy in one season.
Yeah.
So Clay, tell me what's going on. What do you think is going to happen in the Denver Broncos QB situation? And we've heard him go after maybe. Maybe trade for Colin Kaepernick, maybe trade for Robert Griffin III. What do you think they're ultimately going to do?
I think at this point in time, they might want to try and trade up in the draft or go after a guy like A.J. McCarron. I've heard he's the hot trade rumor. I'm not sure what Cincinnati would give up for him. Would take for him? Would it take a first-round pick to get A.J. McCarron? I mean, that's
I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe a second or a third or a second and a fifth or, multiple picks. This Denver team's got all the holes to fill. I mean, they should have money to throw at somebody, but at the same time, do you want to throw that money at RG3 or Colin Kaepernick or Brian Hoyer or somebody like that? I mean, it's just, there's not a lot out there. I think A.J. McCarron, if they can get him, would probably... But at the same time, he's not proven at all.
Right. So I think
he's proven a little bit, but he doesn't even have half a season now. I mean, he's just got a few games under his belt. I mean, that's nothing. So Man, I don't know. They're in a really weird situation at the end. I almost think they should draft a quarterback. You know, maybe Jared Goff slides down late. You can move up. Or Connor Cook, even. You know, because you're not going to get the guy out of North Dakota State, and you're probably not going to get the guy out of Memphis. But you should maybe hope that one or two guys slide down, and maybe you can move up a little bit in the draft. That's what I would do if I was Denver and Oz. I'd probably just draft a quarterback.
I think you're going to see them draft one anyway because they lost two quarterbacks. So they need to at least go after one guy for the future, and then maybe, I don't know, really, if your choice
is... If they get AJ McCarron, though, they're going to bet on him being the future.
True, unless he doesn't pan out. And I think that's more of a situation like a Mettenberger and Mariota, where you have two young guys and you see who can win it out in camp kind of situation.
Yeah, Zach Mettenberger could be an option.
Maybe.
He's not a terrible quarterback. At least he's got some experience. He was actually pretty good for the Titans his rookie year. I wonder if Tennessee would entertain a trade.
I'm sure they would. Tennessee, pick up the phone.
I tell you what, I'd rather have. Lord, what's his name? I just said 2 seconds ago.
AJ McCarron.
No, just the guy from LSU. oh man, Mettenberger. Oh. Just said his name. Good grief, Mettenberger. I'd rather have Mettenberger.
Jamarcus Russell? I don't think you want him.
I'd rather have Mettenberger than Colin Kaepernick or RG3.
Oh,
in
all
honesty.
Yeah, I think. I mean, if I had to pick between one of those two, if I had to pick one of those two, I'd pick with Kaepernick over Robert Griffin III. And I actually heard today that Robert Griffin's more likely going to be able to sign with Cleveland.
Really?
Than Denver, yeah. Which would probably be a bad move for Hugh Jackson and the Browns. They're not off to a fantastic offseason so far when it comes to free agency. They didn't get anybody. They lost some people.
Man, that Cleveland team, they might not win a game next year.
And that's who's – now, if they don't win a game and they get rid of Manziel and Hugh Jackson gets fired, I hope he doesn't get fired after all that, after what he's had to do to overtake this whole roster and the overhaul of the organization. He better at least get a good chance, a fighter's chance at making this team into somewhat a playoff contender.
Alex Mack, Josh Gordon, the list goes on and on. They've lost, or not Josh Gordon, Travis Benjamin. They've lost,
Josh Gordon, too.
Oh, Josh Gordon, too, okay. Yeah,
well, pretty much.
I read a little bit of an article. I didn't read much of it, but the title of the article is how scary thin the Browns are at nearly every position. That was pretty much the title of the article, which is the Browns are scary thin. It's, you know, scary on inexperience and a lack of talent on nearly every position. If RG3 goes there, I'm not expecting much from him. I wouldn't expect much from him if he went to Denver, honestly. I don't. But it could be. I don't know. Denver's got a good defense. Peyton didn't do much in the playoffs. He didn't do next to nothing in the Super Bowl. But you can't expect your defense to play like that every game. And they lost some good players on that defense. Malik Jackson, Danger Nathan, you know, they're not there anymore. So this Denver team is going to look completely different next year. It's going to be interesting. They might not have a winning record next year, which it would be crazy.
Yeah, we're going to see a total different team than we've seen in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. It may take them a couple of years to build it back up. I mean, they made it to the pinnacle. They know what they got to do to get there. But it's kind of a little bit of a rebuilding job, which is really odd coming off of the Super Bowl, obviously. But it's definitely a bit of a rebuilding job.
One more interesting note about basketball before we close out the show, Clay. Last night, the San Antonio Spurs, who just knocked off the Golden State Warriors, were beating the Charlotte Hornets in Charlotte. I believe. Yeah. I may be wrong on just a few here on the number, but I think it was 28, maybe 26-7 at the end of the first quarter.
Wow.
And the Hornets won that game.
Wow.
I watched maybe 5 minutes of it, and it was a blowout at that point, too, and I just turned it off and said, all right, well, that was fun. Turns out Jeremy Lin went back in time a little bit to Lin's sanity. He's got a new haircut now. He went off for 29 points, and he carried the Hornets to a big win over San Antonio, which kind of shocked me, and it shocked the Spurs as well.
I can see that. Hey, you know, speaking of Charlotte, you know, we put them in a power rankings last week, so they're playing some pretty good basketball. That's
look
not
out.
A bad team.
They're, what's funny is if you look at the East, man, it's not that crazy to think that the Charlotte Hornets will be the 3 seed.
Wow.
Because you look at it right now, and the way the East is set up, Miami, okay, there's actually a three-way tie right now. Miami, Atlanta, and Boston are tied for the 3 seed, and Charlotte is just a half game back. And then and then from there, you got three back to Indiana, and then a half game back to Chicago and Detroit. So it's Charlotte could end up being one of the top couple seasons in the East, especially the way that they, you know, the new setup by Adam Silver this year, the commissioner, by allowing just the top 18 in each conference to advance to the playoffs, not giving special advances to division champs.
Yeah, is that in effect for this year? Or is that
it's this year.
Oh, okay, yeah, which I like that, by the way.
Yeah, me too. I think it's the right choice. It's just it's going to take some getting used to.
So even if a team wins the division, they could still miss the playoffs, or they just it's not ranked based on.
I think they can miss it. They're not in the top eight teams, and they win their division.
Okay.
They're still out.
I don't think that's going to happen, but
it could.
It could, yeah, it could, but I don't think
it's going to happen either. If you're going to be able to win your division, do you think you'd be the one of the best 18 teams in the conference?
Yeah, you'd at least be an 8 seed.
So, Clay, it was a historic day, the land of Havana, Cuba, and Major League Baseball today. For the first time since 1999, a Major League Baseball team played a baseball game against the Cuban national team today, in which the Rays, it was a minor story, the Rays actually won the game 4-1 over the Cubans. The big story was that, you know, the whole pageantry of the matchup, the game, being over in Cuba for the first time in that long, connecting Major League Baseball with some young Cubans who have the dream of growing up playing baseball, maybe haven't even realized that dream until today. It was a big moment for those guys, and it was really cool to see who would all be in it. One of the biggest names there, of course, was President Barack Obama.
Yeah, it is big for Cubans, you know, that grow up playing baseball, you know, with thought they may not ever get to play in the big leagues, and now with the relations, you know, easing a bit and you know, becoming normalized, that is big for the Cuban people. A lot of people are coming up about I heard you know, Dan Le Batard. I don't know if you heard his little interview on this morning. He isn't really too happy about it. His family's from Cuba. You know, he thinks America's not really he thinks it's wrong that we're trying to help relations and going and visiting Cuba when they're a pretty terrible government, you know, the things that they do to their people, you know what I mean? So that was interesting to hear his thoughts, you know, and he would obviously know his parents were, you know, Cuban exiles, so
right.
It's interesting. It's kind of a gray area, I mean, honestly, I don't want to get too political or anything, but it's a little bit of a gray area, but at least sports maybe everybody can agree on sports, I suppose, so that could kind of help the differences out, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was cool to unite these two and to have young players, maybe young people who have dreamed to play baseball get to see it for the first time with their own eyes like this. It was a big moment in that perspective. Of course, Dan Le Batard's got his own. Of course, you said he was, you know, he's from there, of course, him and his family. So I'm sure he has his own take on it. But I think the big picture of what people want to take away from today is just how special it was to have this game, going out for a ball game, you know, on a Tuesday day, you know, just going out there. It was a beautiful, it actually started out a little cloudy, but ended up beautiful with the weather there. So I think the most part was just going out together, being a family, and go watching a baseball game.
And it's good for the Cuban people. Maybe we can actually help the people out with our dealings over there.
Maybe. We'll see. The Barack Obama did meet Royal Castro. I can't say it there, but Castro.
Yeah.
They were, of course, sitting right behind home plate, checking it out. Well, that's a wrap. That's going to do it here today for the Sports Report Podcast with Brad and Clay here on Tiki Island Radio and TikiIslandRadio.com. Make sure you can check us out there on Facebook and Twitter. The Sports Report on Facebook and at Twitter, it's at TIR Sports Report. Check out replays of each and every show on SoundCloud, iTunes, and now on Audio Boom. Go there and add our channel, the Sports Report channel, to your favorites and check out replays of any show, anytime, anywhere you want to go. Next week, we'll find out who our Elite Eight teams will be. We'll have many more news about the NBA. And who knows what all will happen in this next week then. So have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next Tuesday.